Welcome back to episode 17 of the Red Seat Podcast. This is your host, Jake Devereaux, and today I am joined by Matt Corey of BP Boston and Vice Sports. Matt, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you, Jake?
I am well. Excited to be back on the show. Another week in the books, talking about the Sox and all that they entail, because there's just frequently a lot to talk about with this particular version of the team.
It's lucky that we're not, you know, fans of like, I don't know, the Brewers or the Reds.
You know,
it would be kind of a boring podcast.
Yeah, that's weird that you said the Brewers, because that's what I was thinking in my head before those words came out of you. So I guess Brewers is just what we gravitate towards when we think about a boring team, but really,
it's kind of sad. It's kind of mean, I guess. Like, not, it's sort of accidental on my part, but
yeah, you know, it's probably a great little organization to be a part of too. It sounds like they have a fun ballpark and John Lucroy and that steroid freak Ryan Braun. So there's a whole lot going for them over there.
That's true, actually. That's true.
I don't know. I can't knock the city because I haven't spent any time there. But
I had a really good sandwich there like 15 years ago, and that's about all I got.
Sandwiches are great. So
yeah, they can be.
That is good news. Another bit of good news that we'll lead off the show with is that Drew Pomerantz looked very much more like himself today in his second start with the Red Sox. He returned to the mound and went six innings pitched, 99 pitches, seven strikeouts, two walks, four hits, and one big two-run shot in the sixth inning that unfortunately relinquished the lead. But, I mean, if the guy's going to go out and pitch like this against a quality lineup like the Detroit Tigers, I think the Red Sox and their fans have to be pretty happy with what he did and what he may do in the future.
For sure. Yeah, he's, you know, he finally got on some regular rest, you know, probably got the butterflies out a little bit, you know, having pitched already and you know, for the Red Sox once before. And yeah, it looked almost exactly like the guy that, you know, the Red Sox thought they were getting, you know, six innings, two runs. That's, you know, with this offense, you're going to win, what, 60% of the games, 70% of the games. I mean, when you do that.
Yeah, I would say probably far more than 60%, right, with this, the way that this offense has been clicking this year, if you're giving them that performance?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, there's still three innings left for the bullpen, and that's, you know, not a shutdown bullpen at this point. And then there's also the fact that as I sit here now with the game on, I know the game is over for anyone who's listening to this, but they're down 4-1. So there's that too. I wanted to build that into the number that I came up with. But whatever it is, it's, you know, it's definitely in the Red Sox favor. They're certainly the favorite. When your starting pitcher goes out and pitches like that, you're the favorite to win, and that's what matters this year, next year. You know, Pomerantz gives the Red Sox a good chance to win when he's you know, when he's out there on the mound. So it was good to see that. And yeah, so that's hopefully one less reason to you know, trade the entire Portland and Salem teams to Chicago.
yes, that's for sure.
But I imagine we'll talk about that some other time or later or whatever.
Yeah, we'll definitely touch on that later in the show. But you know, after Pomerantz left the game today, Cy Young hopeful Joe Kelly got a chance to get on the mound and did throw a ball 101 miles an hour. Unfortunately, he also let up a triple to Justin Upton, who's all of a sudden been swinging a pretty hot bat over the last month or so. So you're right about that bullpen being a little bit tumultuous, but the bottom line here is that Drew Pomerantz looked like Drew Pomerantz today, and that's a very, very, very good thing for the Red Sox going forward. So we can both agree on that. Some interesting notes about the division itself, though. The Yankees made a really interesting trade that was finalized today, sending Aroldis Chapman to the Cubs, for really what I think of as a King's ransom of prospects for a half season of a left-handed pitcher. Gleyber Torres, Billy McKinney, Adam Warren, Rashard Crawford coming back. And I just wanted to note that this is the same guy that the Yankees gave up, you know, some decent to borderline prospects for in the offseason. They gave up Rookie Davis, Caleb Cotham, Eric Jagiello, and Tony Renda for this guy. If you haven't heard of any of those guys, it's because they really haven't done anything. So not a bad little start to selling at the deadline for the Yankees, but more importantly for the Red Sox, who have a lot of games left in the division. They're not going to have to go against Aroldis Chapman anymore, which is awesome for the Red Sox.
Yeah, I don't think it really makes a big difference, to be honest with you. I think it, if you're going to look at this trade from a Red Sox standpoint, it's probably a bad one. You know, the Yankees probably long-term are a stronger organization, stronger team, you know, from having made this deal. So, you know, but who's to say what the, you know, what the outcome of these young players is going to be. So, you know, you're always buying lottery tickets when you're trading, you know, guys in single A, guys in double A, and, you know, you can just look at it as, as percentage chances that, that the guy turns into something, and, you know, the chances are probably pretty, pretty low that any of these guys are huge stars, even though I understand Torres is very,
Gleyber Torres,
very highly thought of shortstop. So, but, you know, I think as far, certainly as far as the 2016 Red Sox goes, it's probably nothing. I guess the only the only other aspect to that is that, you know, they traded Chapman to a National League team,
right?
You know, a team the Red Sox are very unlikely to run into, and not to an American League team. They didn't trade him to the Orioles. They didn't trade him to the Indians. You know, so from that standpoint, I guess it's good for the 2016 Red Sox.
Yeah, it looks like Theo's at it again, really going for it this time. And why shouldn't he with the team that he has this year and all that that entails with that city and what they're going through with that drought being as long as it is? But, man, they really did pay for a half season of Aroldis Chapman there. So that kind of sets the market. It makes me wonder, you know, if the Yankees, and we won't get too far into this because they're the Yankees and this is the Red Sox podcast, but I wonder, after getting that package for Chapman, how hard they're looking at backing off the stance of selling Andrew Miller, because, man, this market is pretty darn good for sellers right now.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I mean, you know, just over the last, whatever, 48 hours, it's sort of become clear the White Sox may start trading some pretty big names too, and you know, you can certainly see a lot of teams that are, you know, hovering around 500 or maybe a little bit below, or in the Yankees case even a little bit above, you know, decide that maybe the return on some of their players is just going to be too much to you know, to turn down. So I think these things tend to even out. You know, we hear a lot about how the market is not going to be you know, a very strong one. And, you know, I don't doubt that that's the case per se, but a lot of times when there's a, you know, a whole bunch of teams that need one thing, someone's going to step up and start selling because they're going to get a lot for them. So,
yeah,
kind of the way it's working out, I think.
Yeah. You mentioned, the White Sox possibly being sellers now, and the Chris Sale saga, I'll call it, which was really, really weird with him, getting scratched from the game, just 2 days ago as you're listening to this podcast, and then everybody panicking and thinking that he was about to get traded, and then to realize that no, he was just in the back room cutting up jerseys that he didn't want to wear, which is one of the most insane baseball stories I've heard in a while.
Even weirder than him getting traded. Like, you know, coming into the year, you would not think that the White Sox would have been dealing Chris Sale, you know, really under almost any condition. And then there's just, I don't know. It's just very, very strange that you know, that this happens. And then that there's, you know, they suspended him for five games. You know, their best player by a large margin.
Yeah. Fined him pretty significant amount of money too.
Yeah. I understand he had to pay them back for the damage he did to the throwback uniforms too.
He really didn't like those things one bit.
No, he didn't like them at all.
there've been so many pictures circulating around Twitter of, you know, his face superimposed on Edward Scissorhands and all sorts of fun stuff, and it's just nuts that he had that tantrum and did that, but I kind of like it. But, you know, I think the larger point is before the whole jersey cutting incident, before the suspension, it did kind of come out that the Chicago White Sox had started listening to offers, at least, on Chris Sale. And the fact is that if he does become available, I'm certain that Dave Dombrowski is going to be checking in on him, and reportedly there has been, you know, some checking in that's already happened.
You can count on whenever there's anyone with any name recognition, I think we know at this point Dave Dombrowski is going to be one of the first people to call you.
Yeah, exactly. And this is a name that, you know, as closely as we guard our prospects here in Boston, and that's been the theme of these teams before Dave Dombrowski. As Ben Carsley put it on the show, we hug our prospects closely and tuck them in at night. That's kind of going out the window a little bit, but I don't think there'd be much complaining here in Boston if the Red Sox were to ship out a bunch of these top names and get a guy like Chris Sale. So let's talk about that possibility a little bit. And first of all, would you be in favor of them making a trade for Chris Sale? And if they did go ahead and do it, what would be a realistic package, you think, going back there for a guy like that?
So the first thing, would I want Chris Sale on the Red Sox? Well, of course. Of course I would. But I think a Chris Sale trade makes a lot more sense before they trade for Pomeranz. So now you're talking about you know, trading out the Red Sox worst starter at this point would be Rodriguez for Sale. Now there's, you know, would you rather have Sale start a game or Rodriguez? Well, you'd much rather have Sale. But that said, I'm not sure how much the difference between those two guys over the next 2 months is worth. You know, they would have Sale, I think, for what, two more seasons following this? I think that's his contract. He has a bunch of team options. You know, they have Rodriguez for, I want to say, 4 or 5 more years after this. So there is a significant difference between those two. I'm not making the argument that Rodriguez is the equivalent value of Sale. But, you know, for where the Red Sox are, I think, you know, they had a real hole in their rotation, and they kind of already plugged it. So you're kind of looking at plugging a hole that doesn't really exist right now, and you'd be paying, you know, as you noted, a king's ransom to do it. So I'm not sure it makes sense for the Red Sox at this point, unless you're dealing Rodriguez in that deal, or Porcello, or somebody else in the rotation. You know, if you're opening a hole in the rotation to trade for Sale, then, and Sale's going to plug that hole, then maybe it makes more sense.
Yeah, I mean, what you're looking at with Sale is a potential, obviously, talent, Cy Young type caliber guy in the American League, best pitcher in the American League. The control that you spoke about the rest of this season, plus 2017, plus two really favorable team options in 2018 and 2019 for just over $12.5 million for the first year, $13.5 million for the second year. Obviously, those would be picked up. So the guy does have a lot of control. I agree with you. I don't think it really makes sense to pay those premiums unless you are sending Eduardo Rodriguez back as part of the package. If the Red Sox were to do something like send Eduardo Rodriguez, Blake Swihart, and maybe a Yoan Moncada back for Chris Sale, is that something that you'd be okay with as a Red Sox fan and someone who follows their system pretty closely?
What was that, Moncada? I blacked out after you said Moncada.
Eddie Moncada, Swihart,
Rodriguez, and Swihart,
and Yoan Moncada. What would you think of a package like that? Obviously, really, really heavy package going back.
It makes your head spin to think about it, but my guess is it would take even a little more than that. I don't know. I don't know that I would trade Moncada for almost anything at this point. I mean, he's I think I would give up Benintendi before I would give up Moncada. And I would give up Devers just because of the age thing. I would give up Devers, who I think is a fantastic talent. I would give him up before I give up Benintendi. So I think if you can do a prospect package, you know, around maybe Benintendi or Devers, and Rodriguez, and then I don't know, Kopech, and somewhere down the, you know, Josh Akame, something else like that further down the line. But I just don't know that it's going to be worth the White Sox time to do that. I guess that's what I have to say about it. I think the White Sox are, you know, well within their rights to ask for Benintendi and Moncada for a guy like Sale. And I just don't think where the Red Sox are right now, it makes that much sense to do that.
Yeah.
You know, again, if they'd done it, you know, 2 weeks ago or whatever, before the Pomerantz deal, then maybe you do make a big splash like that. Right now I'm not sure that's the best thing for the organization long term, given what it does for the team right now.
Yeah, it's hard to think about doing something like that and taking such a massive chunk out of the Red Sox system within just a year's worth of time. I mean, that would be Manuel Margot and all the prospects that went back in the Kimbrel deal, plus all the prospects that went back in the Espinosa deal, or the Pomerantz deal. Espinosa, I guess, is the only prospect, but
yeah,
very significant one. And then if we were to do something like that on top of it, Dave would really deserve that reputation of system destroyer. You know, if it worked out and the Red Sox won the World Series, that'd be something else. But yeah, I agree. I don't think it's very likely at this point. I think there's a lot of other teams out there that could offer pretty good packages. You know, a team like Texas comes to mind maybe have a greater need right now than the Red Sox do and might be a little bit more motivated to pay those prices. But one of the reasons why we're even talking about Chris Sale and the Red Sox being interested in him is because David Price continues not to be the ace that the Red Sox thought that he was going to be as he came into the year. Few of the things that we've seen from him, on the plus side, he's pitched a ton of innings this year. He's up amongst the league leaders in that category. His strikeout minus walk rate is among the best in the game as well. But on the bad side of things, David Price has allowed a major league leading 143 hits, one ahead of the lowly Mike Pelfrey, who the Red Sox will see today as you're listening to this podcast. And he's got a .267 batting average against, which is a career worst for him. And I think the thing that stuck out to me more than any other stat that I read when I was researching how bad Price has been is his hard hit rate of 35.8%, which is so far a career worse that I had to reread the stat because I didn't really believe it. That mark is higher than his previous worst of 28.6 by an incredible margin and ranks ninth worst in all the majors. And to give you an idea of kind of the guys that are worse than him in that category, we're looking at Patrick Corbin, Ian Kennedy, Brandon Finnegan, Matt Whistler, Mike Fiers, Jake Peavy, you know, guys like that that just don't even belong in the same breadth as him. So
right.
I think that there's a little bit more here than maybe people are giving him credit for, and I'm not sure how quickly this turnaround is going to be, you know, coming and whether or not that's even on the horizon for him.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say for sure. I think a couple things. The first thing is, I think as baseball fans, I'm not including like people in the major league front offices in this statement, but I think as fans and analysts, a lot of times we are too quick to try to ascribe reason to things that don't necessarily have reason behind them. you know, Price has started, what, 20 games? 21 games. And that's, it feels like a lot because it's, you know, the baseball season has been going for a while and we're in late July and on and on and on, but that's just not very much, is the truth. And, you know, David Price has started, I mean, how many games has he started in his career? 234. So 21 out of 234 is just nothing. Right. And, you know, there's other numbers that show us that Price is pitching really well. So that's the thing that's really weird about Price's season is that we have these numbers that are showing us different things. There's you know, the walk rate, the strikeout rate, those are elite for a starting pitcher. And then, like you point out, like the hard hit rate, you know, his BABIP, which is what, 339,
right?
Which is, you know, insanely high for a guy with, you know, with that kind of stuff. The home run rate is way up. At this point, I think I'm just still not quite ready to do much more than say this is just sort of, I don't want to say luck because I don't think it's necessarily luck, but for whatever cosmic reason, you know, he's just getting hit a little bit more than he has in the past. You know, it's not velocity per se. Like, so in tonight's game, Monday's game,
mm-hmm.
Verlander and Wilson for the Tigers were pitching, and I'm sort of in and out watching the game, and I saw Verlander throw two pitches to Travis Shaw in Verlander's last inning, and he ended up striking out Shaw. He threw a curveball that was 79 miles an hour that barely curved and went floating right into the center of the strike zone. Any major league hitter is going to just jump on that and crush it, and Shaw took it for a strike. And then there was a fastball that Remy was harping on for about three balls after that, mm-hmm. that was right down and in, just where Shaw likes to golf it, you know, the kind of pitch you don't want to throw to a power hitting lefty,
right.
Left-handed hitter. Shaw was right on it and he fouled it off. And then the next inning or two innings later, Wilson was doing kind of the same thing, threw a bunch of pitches to, I can't remember who it was, but just not good pitches. And so I think the whole point is that sometimes you throw a bad pitch and you get a good result. And sometimes you throw a good pitch and you get a bad result. And that tends to happen, I think, a lot more than we give it credit for. I'm sorry to get all meta on you with this, but no. I just feel like Price is kind of a prime example of us looking for reason when there isn't any.
I agree to some extent with that. I didn't think
you'd agree at all. So already I'm way ahead of the game.
No, I mean there is some element to that. Obviously, there are times when things break your way. You know, there are times when guys are hitting balls on the screws and they're hitting them right at people and vice versa. So I understand that aspect of it, but I've seen enough of these 21 starts so far to tell you that this David Price that we're seeing this year, even in some of his really good starts where he's struck out a whole ton of batters, he just has not been as crisp to me. And I think there is something to be said for taking a step back from the numbers and looking at things from just a what do you see type of evaluation, just a visual evaluation of what I've seen. And what I've seen is a pitcher that gets into pretty bad pitcher's counts oftentimes against hitters that he has really no business messing around with in that regard, you know, 3-0 counts or 3-1 counts. And a guy who is just so much more hittable than he has been at any point in his career. And I think that this is bearing itself out in the fact that his sinker, his four-seam fastball, curveball, and cutter are all getting hit at alarmingly higher rates than they ever have in his career. And his changeup has been the only pitch that hasn't suffered as immensely as the other pitches. But what I'm seeing now is a guy that just doesn't look very confident in his stuff and just really isn't executing. And he hasn't been executing for the whole year. So I'm more willing to attribute that lack of success to, you know, a transition to a new city like Boston than I am just to luck. You know, we've seen guys struggle in their first season here. Alex Speer wrote about that today, actually, that, you know, he used Rick Porcello last year as an example, a guy with a pretty good track record that came over and pitched as bad as anyone could possibly pitch last year and then righted the ship. So I think that Price certainly has the ability and time on his side to right things in the long term, but I'm just not sure if he's going to be able to get that confidence back and pitch and approach pitching in a different way for the remainder of the season. And I think he really does need to approach it in a different way than he has been, because what I'm seeing is a lack of execution and confidence. And I'm curious to see whether you agree with that.
I noticed some increased frustration, but I think that's just because he's not getting the results that he wants to get. Then that's, you know, mostly recently, you know, like the start against the Twins. And so that's more or less what I've noticed. I mean, his walk rate is, you know, essentially the same walk rate he had last year. You know, you can get deep into the decimal places and it gets different, but for the most part, it's exactly the same. You know, he's striking out a half a guy more per nine innings. You know, he's leaving fewer guys on base, but last year he had kind of an unsustainably high number there. I mean, you brought up his hard hit rate. I mean, it's his hard hit rate, you know, is up, what, 7% from last year. But the weird thing is that so if you look at Fangraphs and it's got it laid out between soft, medium, and hard, which is a joke unto itself. But last year he was at 17%, 55%, 28%. I'm not going to be able to say what those categories are without laughing. and then this year he's at 17%, 47%, and 36%. I mean, it's just like a little bit of the medium moved too hard. Like, guys are hitting him just a little harder than they were last year. So maybe he's missing his spots a little bit more, but the strikeouts and walks are right there. So that kind of makes me go, maybe not.
Do you think that his problems of nibbling around the zone or not getting into favorable counts, pitchers counts, could be manifesting themselves not in walks, but when he does get into these situations where it's 3-0, 3-1, he's trying so hard to throw something over the plate that he's giving up a lot of pitches for hits?
I mean, maybe.
See, that's what I'm seeing anecdotally here.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen that a little too, but I don't know that I'm willing to put my name to that quotation yet without looking deeper into it. But look ahead to next spring training. What is David Price going to say? He's going to say that he's excited for the next year and he's going to be much better than he was. And he's probably going to say, oh, he figured out he was doing this little thing differently, or this little thing that he's fixed is now different. And, you know, we'll all sort of jump on that. I just don't see any giant difference between what he's doing now and what he did last year, other than, you know, variance and I was going to say, you know, maybe the competition is a little different. But I don't know. I'd have to look deeper into that. I think sometimes you throw a good pitch and it gets hit, and I think that's really the answer here. And honestly, I'm not still even though he's, you know, it's interesting you bring up Porcello, because you know, last year Porcello looked like a disaster, you know, and we just given him that this giant contract and oh no. And then Porcello shows up this year, and he's the Rick Porcello that Ben Cherington thought he was getting. He's the Rick Porcello that Ben Cherington gave that contract to. And that's not to say he'll be that same guy next year. I mean, who knows? But you know, the weirdness of pitching is such that we can't know for sure. But I think there's a very good chance that the guy who shows up in Fort Myers next year for the Red Sox is going to be the David Price the Red Sox thought they were getting. He's going to be, you know, 9 strikeouts per 9 and 2 walks per 9, and the home runs are going to be more or less the, you know, his career norm. And I think there's a really good chance that he's the guy that they thought they were getting then. The reason I brought up what is he going to say next year is my guess is he's going to talk about, you know, the pressure of pitching for a new team. And, you know, the expectations that come along with a big contract. And, you know, it's not that he wasn't making a lot of money before. Of course he was. But I think, you know, we've heard this a lot, certainly as Red Sox fans. We've heard that, you know, guys come into, you know, a new place with, you know, the expectations of playing a certain way based on the contract they sign. And, you know, the big number that they see every other week or whatever it is, whenever they get paid on that check. Is, you know, adds a lot of pressure. It makes them want to be better than they were before. And it wouldn't shock me if, you know, if Price was maybe trying to be a little too fine with his pitches, like you were saying, trying to be a little too perfect, and maybe that's had some sort of effect. And then you know, things kind of snowball a little bit. You start overthinking, you start trying to correct things, and before you know it, you fly out of the cloud upside down. So I think the end of this story for the Red Sox is not a bad one. For the 2016 team, you know, Price is probably what he is. He doesn't seem to be an ace, but I would bet that he will be next year for whatever that's worth, which is nothing.
Well, I hope you're right. And to bring up Rick Porcello one more time, we all know how bad his 2015 season was, and his hard hit rate was 32.8%. Yeah. He was able to lower that this year by 2.2%. David Price would have to lower his rate by about 6%, which is an insane amount in order to get back to career norms. So he has 4 percentage points more to go in that category than Rick Porcello did, making the jump from last year to what he's currently doing this year. So I think that is the type of thing that worries me a little bit more than just, you know, than your worry level at this point, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I can get behind the numbers, you know, to a certain extent. And, you know, guys are pulling the ball on him a lot more than they were. You know, the hard hit number is what it is. The home run number is what it is. But, you know, I think that there are reasons for all these things. And, you know, it's just we're still only 21 starts into it.
So we've covered off on Price pretty thoroughly here. We're all hoping for better days on that front. But, you know, all things aside, if this is the version of David Price that we can expect for this season, in a trade for Chris Sale, probably isn't the most realistic thing considering what it would cost to get a guy like that. Do you expect the Red Sox to be busy here at all in the last week up, you know, coming towards the deadline here? Dombrowski certainly got a lot done early on, making 4 moves that we've talked about pretty extensively on the show here. But some reports have been out that both Dombrowski has been getting trade offers from other teams. There's been reports that the Marlins have been scouting Eduardo Rodriguez. And there was a Scott Lauber report about the Red Sox, you know, talking about some bigger moves out there as well. I'm sure there's a tremendous amount of talking that amounts to nothing around these deadlines, but do you feel like the Red Sox will do anything else meaningful here, or do you think that they're pretty much just going to go with what they have?
I think Dombrowski is probably going to go with what he has, but I think he's open to making bigger deals, and I think that's why we keep hearing reports about him talking to other GMs and you know, scouting this guy or, you know, scouting that guy. So I think the chances are that nothing will happen. But, you know, he could totally trade Moncada and Benintendi for sale, like, you know, or some other, you know, variant therein. I could see that happening too. I think if there's anything that the Red Sox might legitimately need, it's maybe another bullpen arm. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, that Ziegler trade was really, really fantastic.
Even a godsend, would you say?
Yeah, yeah.
Which has been being thrown around a lot.
Yeah.
I think Farrell called him a godsend, didn't he?
Did he really? That's funny. Yeah, I mean, he goes in there and he gets guys out. And, you know, we've seen, you know, just tonight, Monday night, you know, Joe Kelly made his bullpen debut for the Red Sox, and it went, you know, it went as expected. It's
just as good as his starting days.
He's Joe Kelly. He gives up runs, man. That's what he does. He throws harder now. Like, I mean, I guess he hit, I don't know if he hit 100 before as a starter, but he might have. But yeah, he throws really hard, but he just doesn't have the command. And, you know, that's, I know, you know, Brian McPherson of the Providence Journal has talked about this in the past, you know, with Kelly. Like, typically you put a guy in a bullpen and he, you know, his stuff plays up. To the point where the command is less of an issue. But Kelly's stuff already played up as a starter. Like, that was, you know, that's what made him interesting. But the results are never there, and he just doesn't have the command. And, you know, unless he's going to start throwing 110, which he didn't tonight. He threw 100, 101. He threw 100 a couple times. It's impressive. Looks pretty on a radar gun.
It's no Michael Kopech.
Apparently not. But, you know, pretty radar gun or not, like, the results are the same. And I maybe he'll be better next time out. Maybe I'm over judging him just based on this one thing. I probably am. But the point is that he's, I don't think at this point he's a guy that the Red Sox are going to want to see in a situation where, you know, where the something tangible is on the line. And, you know, the two guys who, you know, who pitched, I think, out of the pen tonight, the other one being Buchholz, is the same thing. You know, if Buchholz is not going to be a starter, this is not the way to use him. You know, DL him, trade him, cut him if you have to, but having him out of the bullpen is just, I don't think, it doesn't serve anybody. So I think there's, you know, while I said there wasn't really a hole for a Chris Sale in the rotation, there I think is a hole for a better bullpen arm.
I think he will go out and get another bullpen arm. I think that's something that's going to happen. I would expect that's probably the only move Dave Dombrowski makes over the next week or so. You know, I don't really want him to go out and trade for Chris Sale. As much as we talk about that as a possibility and going after a big fish like that,
yeah,
I would just so much rather Dombrowski hold his chips this year, those big giant chips that he has in Benintendi and Moncada.
Yeah.
And I still have this dream alive of Jose Fernandez becoming available sometime before his contract runs up with Miami. And I just really want that power right-hander. He's the best player in baseball to watch for me right now. He's just incredible. So that's the guy who I want, and I don't care if it's next year or whenever.
I understand. He is, you know, he's baseball porn. He is the guy you want to watch, no question about it. And you know, it sort of raises the question, like, I know Dombrowski is, you know, quote unquote all in this year, but you only have so many, you know, bullets in the gun, so to speak, and they already used a pretty significant one to get Pomeranz. And they're, you know, they needed to get somebody. So I'm not necessarily down on that per se, but you got to pick your spots, because you come away at the end of it with what you come away with. And, you know, if they deal Benintendi and Moncada and Devers, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, the guys they get in return are going to be, that's going to be it.
Yep.
It's not like, you know, it's not like there are other guys in the minor league system who are, you know, percolating up. I mean, there might be a few, but this is anyway. So I would expect that, you know, it might behoove the Red Sox if Dombrowski waits a little bit, if he waits to get into the off season when things are, you know, more players are available for trade, really, and the costs are not as high. I forget who did the study on it. It might have been Dave Cameron at Fangraphs, but you know, the cost of pitching at the trade deadline is, I think, 1.5 or twice. It doesn't matter. It's a ridiculously inflated cost.
Yeah, I mean, we saw that with the Yankees deal that we mentioned earlier.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
The Chapman deal. Obviously, his value was a little low because of him firing off shots in his house prior to that deal. But that's pretty indicative of the cost difference between the offseason and midseason here, and that's for less baseball from these guys. But one of the other factors here that should be in favor of Dombrowski waiting a little bit is that some of the players that might be involved in this, the Blake Swihearts, the Eduardo Rodriguez's that we talk about, their value could go up and should go up from there on out. I mean, Blake's been dealing with the injuries. Eduardo's been dealing with the inconsistencies, but I wanted to talk about what Eduardo Rodriguez has been able to do in his last couple starts as he's made his way back post All-Star break. And there really has been pretty meaningful change in his start against New York on the 16th and then his start against Minnesota on the 22nd. Mm-hmm. And a few of the things I wanted to talk about were his increased usage of his slider and his changeup. And he increased them by a significant margin. One of the big things that's been talked about, one of the adjustments that was made when he was at Pawtucket, was the positioning of his hands as well. And the results have been really, really good. I think last time out he struck out about 8 guys as well through that slider 34% of the time during that start, through the four-seam 51% of the time, and mixed in 10% change-ups. That's a really, really healthy pitch mix, and that's something that we had not seen from him pretty much the entire season outside of those two starts. In that New York one, I mentioned 25% sliders. In this one, 34%. The high before that was 11%. So this is really the first time we've seen Eduardo pitching like a complete pitcher this season.
Yeah, to me, he looked much better against Minnesota. And I was going to just say that maybe that's because he was facing Minnesota, but the Yankees offense is pretty awful, which is a sentence that is really delicious to say. You just kind of want to swish it around in your mouth before you swallow it. Yeah. Yeah, I was impressed, you know, with his command against Minnesota, with his willingness to go to his off-speed stuff. We just didn't see that before. It was almost like he was expecting guys to miss his fastball every single time, even when they knew it was coming. And in the majors, you just can't really do that. So, yeah, I'm definitely, excited, I guess, about him. Maybe as almost as much excitement as last year, after they brought him from Baltimore. He's not throwing quite as hard as that, but we have a longer track record of him now. So, yeah, if he can continue to make the off speed stuff work, you know, the fastball should play up, and that should be a workable starter, and that's what the Red Sox need. They need these guys to come out. That's the crazy thing is with this offense, they don't even need an ace. They don't Charrington's idea of having, whatever it was, 5 number 3 starters, like that would be fine.
Right.
That would get the job done.
If we can get Eddie working at 75% of his capacity this year, I think that would be probably a 4.5 ERA pitcher the rest of the way. And that would be wonderful out of the fifth spot.
Absolutely.
So we'll certainly take that. So that's certainly a good thing. The rotation looks like it's stabilizing, even if David Price doesn't turn it around with the additions of Porcello and a decent to good Eduardo Rodriguez. Things are definitely on the up and up because Porcello never loses at home, and Steven Wright's unbelievable. He's a Cy Young candidate, which is crazy that that's a thing. And, you know, you can laugh at me all you want that he's a Cy Young candidate, but he is leading the American League in ERA. So it's
what's his run average?
You know,
drop the whole earned thing and then tell me how he's doing.
I don't care. He's amazing. He's a golden god. I mean, every time he goes out there, I just feel great.
Jake,
are you saying
that he's a godsend?
I am. He is a godsend. That maybe fifth starter that was maybe not good enough because Dave Dombrowski had too many arms in the spring, could garner some Cy Young votes, which is crazy. But we've got some other really good news down on the farm system that I wanted to touch on. Mm-hmm. The first thing I should mention is that Brian Johnson is fully back from his issues with anxiety and is starting in Pawtucket. So that's a really positive thing. I mean, his starts haven't gone great so far, but he's a guy working his way back from pretty much no baseball activity for that period of time. So this is great news for the Red Sox in the long term. And then as far as the two big prospects that we've been mentioning, Benintendi and Yoán Moncada, both of those guys have finally started to shift position to where the team will actually need them in the future. Benintendi made his first start in left field just a few days ago, and Yoán Moncada has been reportedly just starting to take ground balls up in Portland, so at third base. So those are.
Is that true? I hadn't heard that last part.
Yeah, that just came out. A guy from the local Portland beat actually wrote that. So that's a real positive thing that both those things are happening. And we were kind of wondering as we approach August. I mean, we're 5-6 days away from August, and he hadn't taken any ground balls at third base up until that point. And that's really the only place that people can figure that he'll play, with the outfield being as solid as it is and Benintendi on his way. So it makes a lot of sense, and it's good to finally see that that's going to start happening. And I'm sure that more will come out about that in the next few days. But that's good. And one of the other things I wanted to mention before we get on to what the Red Sox schedule is going to be this upcoming week is that after a long time of not having one this season, this is our inaugural season of the Red Seat, so there's that. We do have a listener question submission box now that you can find on the BP Boston site. You click on any of the episodes of the Red Seat podcast, and there's a little Google form. You can enter your name and submit a question to us, and myself and whoever else is on the show with me will go ahead and tackle your Red Sox question there and answer it to the best of our ability.
Just hope that it's not Matt Collins who you get to answer your question. Other than that, yeah.
Yeah, other than that, you're in great hands. So,
I kid. For some reason, Matt Collins, people love to jump on him on Twitter, and so that's just me copying that. But actually, I like Matt a lot.
His Matt's work is fantastic. Matt's unbelievable at what he does. He's an absolute machine, and guy knows a tremendous amount. So as much as we jokingly bag on him, the guy's unbelievable.
He's very good.
He's our version of Jeff Sullivan with how much that guy writes. So it's pretty incredible. But I think this adds a new level of interaction to the show too. And as we answer more questions and get to know the audience a little bit more, it'll only make this show a whole lot more fun. So I definitely urge everybody that does listen to go ahead and post those questions, because, you know, I make these agendas all the time, and sometimes you guys think of stuff that I never even would think about. And also throw in crazy trade proposals there. I always like to hear those. I don't hear enough of those on
Sports Radio. You're asking for it now.
Oh, I really am. I heard some terrible ones on my way home today from work on WEEI, so I'm inviting our more educated base to come up with some stuff there. So,
well, I think if the Red Sox can get Sale for Buchholz, then I think that's something they should look into.
Yeah, that's.
I'm not saying jump on it. I'm just saying look into it.
They really need a righty, so I think they should make that work. Upcoming schedule for the Red Sox, though, not exactly soft, not exactly hard, pretty much medium right now. They've got Detroit for a couple more here. Wright versus Pelfrey, Eddie versus Michael Fulmer at home, the good Fulmer, not Carson Fulmer. Then they hit the road for a pretty significant period of time, I believe. This starts a stretch where I think they only have one day off all the way up until August 31st. So it's going to be a pretty tough schedule for the Red Sox here on out. A lot of these games on the road, but they've got at the LA Angels. They've got Price versus Weaver, Porcello versus Lincecum, Pomerantz versus Santiago, and Stephen Wright versus Tyler Skaggs. None of those starts really scare me too much. I think the Red Sox should have the advantage there, but they are playing the LA Mike Trouts, so you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's true. Trout is fantastic, and definitely, I guess they'll be on the West Coast, so it'll be tough for Boston to tune in for that, but if you can stay up, Boston, at least watch the first inning. Watch Mike Trout. He's worth the price of admission.
Yeah, out of all those starts that I mentioned, though, I think the one I'm most excited about is seeing Eduardo Rodriguez again go against Michael Fulmer, because Fulmer's been pretty good this year.
Fulmer's been fantastic this year, yeah.
Yeah, I'm really interested in seeing how he does against the Red Sox lineup, which is, you know, just phenomenal. So I think Jake Peavy, and, you know, he might be just a little old and delusional at this point, but I think I read a quote a couple of days ago that he said that the Red Sox lineup this year is the best lineup he's ever faced in his career, which I thought was an interesting statement for a guy like that to make. Maybe he's still just living off that high from 2013, but
Well, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, early in his career, he was so incredibly good, and also pitching in San Diego when it was really as much of a pitcher's park as it's ever been. And yeah, so it's not hard to see that at that time he probably wasn't afraid of anybody. just dial it up to 98 or whatever, and then go out for a drink.
People forget how good he was. He was unbelievable. He pitched so hard he tore his muscle off his body.
That's probably
no, like, yeah. Legit, like that.
No, I know.
Whatever that wing muscle is that, like, attaches, I believe that's the one that he tore from his ribs. That's just unbelievable that happened. It's not a common injury.
No, and you know, it's pretty impressive, you know, that he's sort of reinvented himself as this kind of junk baller that he is now. But I don't know. That's the kind of makings of a good article. You know, if he was still pitching for the Red Sox, you might actually go through, you know, the teams that he's pitched against and try to figure out if that was if that was really a legitimately true statement.
All right, well, you can look forward to Matt Corey's article on teams that Jake Peavy has faced.
You can look forward to it if you like, but it's not coming.
All right, well, with that, Matt, anything else that you want to add before we go ahead and log off of the airways?
No, I think it's been a fun show, and I appreciate you having me on.
All right. Well, to everybody out there, in addition to that listener question box that I mentioned, you can also tune in and subscribe to us on iTunes. You can rate and review us there as well. You can also subscribe to us on Stitcher. You can follow me on Twitter at DevJake, and you can follow Matt at MattyMatty2000, the only Twitter handle I have managed to memorize on the show, because it's the best.
And thank you. Thank
I'll you continue much. To say that. thanks for joining us, guys, and we'll be back next time post-trade deadline. So I'm sure we'll have stuff to talk about.